listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Unfortunately, my co-host, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox, will not be with us today, but she should be back next week. But each week, we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many great ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually healthy. Having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And fortunately, I've been able to meet some authors that have written about things that really do address those things that all of us as parents are going to deal with at some point, you know, right from birth all the way till sometimes the ones that just haven't quite left home yet, even after they're 18. So, but I'm just going to make sure that we continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, my guest today is Casey Matthews. Casey is the author of the new memoir called Preemie: Lessons in Love, Life, and Motherhood, in which she chronicles the story of her daughter's birth, which was 4 months premature, and the life lessons that she learned as a result of it. So, Casey, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Well, I gotta tell you, I did get a chance to read, I'm probably maybe a third of the way through the book, and I'm very impressed. And one of the things that I like is that I think if somebody first looked at the book and they just glanced at the cover, and, you know, they might look at it and go, well, you know what, I'm not in a situation to where I'm about to have a child or something like that. But what I realized was, now that wasn't the case, that this was really life lessons that we could all use, I mean, as humans, but also, I mean, as parents of children of any age.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because that was sort of my hope. It was really that, for me, my daughter's premature birth was this moment of awakening, like a transformation, and it was that moment in time where nothing was the same after. And for me, it was a premature birth. But for other people, there are those other moments, whether it's a medical diagnosis or an accident of some sort or the loss of a loved one or even positive events, where the lens you look through in your life, it changes. And it's how you respond and react to that and all the lessons that you ultimately take away. And so that's what I hope people more than anything take away from this book.
Well, and I think you touched on something, because, I mean, as a father myself, I know that my lens changed as I looked at life becoming a father and being there for the birth of my sons. But I can't imagine how that would have gone for me if I would have had to have dealt with, again, what you did from the standpoint of your child being so incredibly premature and being so small. So, tell us a bit about the story. I mean, did you have any idea that your daughter was going to be born that early?
I didn't, and there was nothing that prepared me for it. And it's interesting to hear you say that, because really, when we're thrust into these traumatic, unexpected situations, we really have no idea how we'll react and respond until it's upon us. And I found out that sort of fight or flight. I was a flight animal, and we had our son, Tucker, had been born on his due date, weighing 8 pounds, 2 years prior. So I was halfway through my pregnancy, you know, 5 months into it. Mm-hmm. I was at the 25th week, you know, with 40 weeks being full-term gestation, and I wasn't feeling great. It was right after Thanksgiving, so I was asked to come into the hospital just for, you know, just to be on the safe side, make sure everything was okay, and upon further examination, the doctor said, you're in the middle of labor, and you're not leaving this hospital until this baby's born, and we've got to hook you up to machines, and I absolutely panicked and said, how can this be happening? This can't be happening. And in fact, clutched under the arm of a nurse and said, things like this don't happen to me. And she looked right back at me and said, they do now. And that was the moment. That was the moment when it all shifted. And the doctors were able to hold off labor for 24 hours. And then ultimately, our daughter was born the next day. And she weighed 1 pound, 11 ounces, and she was 11 inches long at birth.
Now, for those people that maybe haven't been in that position, well, in the waiting room, that have seen what a baby looks like, I mean, explain a little bit what the difference is, you know, to what you're looking at on a child that's 1 pound, 11 ounces versus what most of us see that are between, you know, 7 and 9 pounds.
Right. So, like I said, my 8 pound boy, he was placed right on my chest after birth by the midwives, and it was just this sort of euphoric moment. My daughter came by emergency C-section because suddenly they were monitoring everything so closely. Her heart rate started to plummet. And in fact, after the emergency C-section, it was in an operating room with 6 doctors, 6 nurses, 3 of them pediatric. Right after her birth, she was whisked away, and I never saw her. So I didn't, in fact, see her until 2 hours after delivery, when I was then wheeled into the NICU, which is the neonatal intensive care unit. And I had fought and balked and said, I don't want to go. I really didn't feel ready. Nothing was preparing me for it. But the nurse insisted, and they said, oh, this is mom and baby need to see each other. This is what you need to do. So I was wheeled into this NICU, and there were a lot of nurses gathered around a plastic box, which is the isolate-let is the term I later learned. And they opened it up and said, there's your baby. And to see, there are photos on my website, you can see what a baby of this size looks like. It was the most startling thing I'd ever encountered in my life. There was such a disconnect between, could this have come out of my body? And I know I'm speaking this rather than her, because that's how I felt at the time. It was like seeing some sort of alien creature. And my response was, get me out of here. And I ultimately ended up throwing up all over myself, and they whisked me back out of there. And it took me 2 days to even go back to see her again, because I'd been so traumatized by that first viewing of her. And I really believed I didn't want anything to do with her. I was just so deeply, deeply afraid.
Now, what were you most afraid of?
Gosh, that's a great question. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of the future and all that it held, but I think more than anything, what I was so deeply afraid of was that she was going to die. And I couldn't even at the time come to formulate that thought. It's only upon reflection that I see, wow, this fear, this enormous fear that I put up was really like a block for the love of my own baby, that really at this point I've come to see that the enormity of my fear was actually a measure of the enormity of my love, but I couldn't even go there. And it was my husband who stepped up and was just held vigil by our daughter's side and was just amazing. And he gave me the time and space to find my way, knowing ultimately that I would get there. I believe he felt that way. And I write about it in the book. It was almost this, I believe in recreating my truth. And I wished I had been better prepared for seeing our daughter for the first time, and that someone had prepared me by showing me photos and saying, this is what a baby born at 25 weeks looks like. They're called micropreemies. This is a picture of a NICU. This is what it sounds like. This is what you should expect. And I sort of wrote all that out for myself and imagined it while I was in the hospital room recovering, and kind of recreated that truth so that it enabled me to get back to see her.
Well, and I want to share something with the listeners out there. And again, anybody who's listened to this show before knows that I believe it's very interactive, and one of the things that we can do is many people are listening through their computer, so you can open up another window and you can go to www.caseymatthews.com, and that's Matthews with one T. So it's caseymatthews.com, and you can go to the photo gallery and you can take a look for yourself. And Casey, I get the impression that part of your reason for writing this book is so that somebody else in this position doesn't have the same shock that you had in realizing that you weren't prepared for this.
That's exactly right. And then taking it even one step further, the guilt and shame that I felt for years following her birth because of the way I reacted, like we said, you don't know until you're in the situation how you react, but I was so ashamed that that was my response. And I carried that with me, and I kept searching for other mothers, other women who would have said the same thing, that they had felt the same way, that they had responded the same way, and I couldn't find it. And it created this deep loneliness that built upon all the shame and the guilt and the fear. And finally, when we were far enough out after that long, long journey, Andy was turning 7, and I realized, wait a minute, I can't be the only woman who ever responded and felt that way, and then nobody else has ever stood up and said it, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to raise my hand and stand up and just admit how I responded so that other women, if there were, I figured there had to at least be one who had felt this way, would not feel so alone in that and speak the truth and put it out there. And the response has just been unbelievable of people thanking me for the truth and the honesty and really sort of setting them free from this trap of the guilt and shame that they were in as well.
And I read some of those also, because some of the comments I know are on the website. So obviously you did reach quite a few people, and you did so in something that they also felt, that it was something that they needed, some information that they needed, and that they were glad to get it. Now, again, I told you I'm only about a third of the way through the book, so will I give the story away if I ask, how's your daughter doing now?
Well, that is her on the cover. So it's interesting when your listeners go to see the photos, I actually start working chronologically backward from where Andy is today, because that first glimpse of a preemie baby, a micro-preemie baby, is very shocking. It's almost like you have to ease into it. So she's on the cover of the book. She is 11 years old. She'll be turning 12 in November, and she has so far beyond exceeded everybody's expectations. She had a brain bleed in her first week of life. Her prospects were quite grim, but based on everything we were told by the doctors. But another theme and reason for writing the book was this idea of, we're not going to let statistics and others limit our child's potential. So we're not going to box her in and say, well, because this is how it's supposed to be, this is how it has to be. It was, we will afford her every opportunity we can to be the best she can be and let her go. And as you'll find later in the book, I chronicle a lot of the alternative therapies that we also pursued in conjunction with traditional medicine. So we walk these two parallel paths. So she is today in sixth grade. She's a ski racer. She flies around on the soccer field. We were told she'd be really small. She's the tallest girl in her class. She cannot get enough of books and learning. She just has this deep desire to know and love and study. So she's phenomenal. She's absolutely amazing. And she's also turning 12 and coming close to the teenage years, and she can be an utter pain, like children of that age are, and slam her door and all the rest that comes along with the full package.
Well, and you mentioned about the alternative therapies, and as you said, you write about it further on in the book. I mean, yep. Share with us some of those that were the most helpful, for your daughter and really the entire family.
Well, it started out when my husband felt like, wow, we're in crisis here. We really need some help. And he said, do you think we should see a therapist? And my reaction was, how could we possibly sit in a therapist's office and talk about what we're going through when we're going through this, and we don't have enough time in the day to brush our teeth, let alone spend time with our two-year-old who was at home? So that just felt like there's just no way we can do this right now. But there was this real sense of, but we need some sort of support because we were struggling and struggling to keep our heads above water. So right about that same time, someone gave me the name and number of a woman called an energy healer. And her whole philosophy is based on the idea that we are made up of energy and that our energy gets blocked. And so because we had nothing to lose, we went to see her for an appointment. And it was Karen McCarthy was sort of the gateway that opened our lives up to all these other alternative therapies that I had never known anything about at all. And she taught us homeopathy so that we were able to have remedies that we were supporting ourselves with at home. Sort of the very base fundamental thing she talked about is if we're made up of energy and we're sort of this electrical circuit, we need water for that to flow through. And at that point where I was doing this daily NICU, we're an hour outside of the hospital, driving in and out, dropping my son with someone to care for him, and I was living on a diet of coffee and cookies just to kind of keep myself fueled and going, she was the one who pulled back, let's hang on, before you can take care of your children, you need to take care of yourself. And it starts with water, and then it starts with healthy food. So I went from the coffee and cookies to bringing in the water and the nuts and the proteins, and then I was better able to meet everybody's needs. So then it continued from there, this wonderful program called Brain Gym, where it's lining up both sides of the brain, and then cranial sacral therapy, and we worked with an osteopath, and then Reiki came into play. So it all kind of, all these different modalities came into play, and we found what worked best for us, and it continues to be a really important part of our lives to this day.
So, and what I hear you saying is that these are things that, that have helped you, and the fact of having a preemie isn't necessarily, you know, the issue now. These are things that have helped you as parents and as a family, you know, as far as the energy healing, you know, that's helped you, you know, making sure that you have plenty of water and such, that's helped you, which now makes you more available to be there for your family.
Oh, that's absolutely it. And it was so much about being present, so that my typical response to stressful situations was to check out. So it was really the first time in my entire life that I'd been called upon to step up and be present and be accountable and be responsible. And so it wasn't just that these alternative therapies were healing for our daughter, which they were. They were amazing, the impact they had on her life. But they helped all of us as an entire family to heal. I often wonder, where would I be had this not come in, because I was so traumatized. And it went on for years. So it was amazing the amount of healing that occurred within all of us and continues to, and we continue to pursue these paths because it's really, at this point, about optimal living and living our lives to the very best we possibly can.
Now, I've had a little bit of experience with Reiki. Tell me how Reiki has helped in regards to the children.
Oh, well, first of all, Reiki, the book was born on the Reiki table, because I had said earlier about Andy turning 7, and I, every year upon her birthday, my physical body, like, remembers the trauma, and I end up ill. And it was this wild pattern that every year I thought, I can't believe it, I'm sick again, my back is thrown out, my stomach. And it was the first year that I actually had forgotten it was her birthday coming up, but my body hadn't, and I was ill. So there I was on a Reiki table, and the Reiki master saying, tell me about her birth and take me back. And that was the moment on the Reiki table where the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment of my responses and all that left my body, and I realized I'd been carrying it around for 7 years. And when I was leaving the office of this woman, I said, now I'm not carrying this anymore. I've been carrying it for 7 years. What am I supposed to do with the rest of my life? And she said, maybe you'll write a book. And within months, I started chronicling this book. And since then, the children have both taken Reiki classes themselves. And it's essentially, for anybody who's not familiar with Reiki, it is, we all are made of energy, and we are all natural healers, and we have the ability to heal right within our own hands. And Reiki activates that. So you're having your hands on someone else, and you're really transferring life force energy, not so much from the Reiki master into the other. It's bringing the life force energy of that individual who you have the hands on, bringing that up and out and activating it for them. And it's just amazing. I'm not sure how your experience was, but that's how I have found it to be just amazing and so healing and grounding for the children. And for them to have taken a Reiki class themselves, they have and know now that they have the ability to heal themselves, so that when they fall and scrape their knee on the playground, they can just sit and put their own hands on themselves, not only to help heal, but calm themselves and feel like they don't have to look outside of themselves for help, that they are capable. So it's been pretty amazing to have that as a resource for them.
Absolutely, yeah, and especially from the standpoint of them getting it. I mean, it sounds like they get it for the fact that they can sit down and take the time and know that this is something they can do within themselves. That's beautiful. I was going to tell you, I'm getting an instant message that is coming across that I would like to read to you. This one reads, it was fascinating to read about your experience as my son was also a preemie. 3 pounds, 9 ounces at birth. He is now a very active 12-year-old. It was a very scary time for us, with over 3 months of hospitalization before he was able to come home. On an emotional side, because the doctors say he may always have respiratory issues, I feel that I have become a bit obsessive and overly protective. I am trying to let go of these feelings, but I can't seem to get past my fear of losing him. How have you handled this in your life? Wow.
Oh, my word. I'm covered with chills, because that's it right there. And that's sort of the universal, not just for the preemie, but any parent. As you know, that's our greatest fear, losing our child. It's the most monumental moment in our lives when these children come into our life, and then it's this holding on tightly and trying to protect as best as we can, never let go. And that's exactly what I went through, and that was the struggle. The alternative therapies were huge for me, having someone's hands on me on the Reiki table, really helping me to breathe and to trust, and to know that ultimately I don't have control. So it's on sort of a higher spiritual level, but then really down more on the physical level. What we did is we developed our own home breathing regimen program, because Andy also had chronic breathing issues. And in fact, we were told by yet another different doctor, pulmonologist, that she would have asthma for her entire life, and there wasn't anything we could do to move past this. And it was another instance where I thought, no, you know, I'm not going to take that as the truth just because this is the way a doctor is framing it and kind of boxing it in. I'm not going to let that happen, or at least give our daughter the opportunity to move beyond it, so that if we held it as a belief, it didn't become so. So I went to a physical therapy shop, which they have those around, and they are open to the public. You probably have to do some research on that to find one near where you are. And I bought bags of feathers and straws and any kind of kazoo, or I remember there was a thing with a ping pong ball you blow in and it raises it up. So we were constantly doing any sort of lung expanding, lung broadening exercise that we could possibly do all the time. And my husband having the kids on the floor with Tickle Monster and these big gulping things of air. So that was the part that I felt like I was actively doing something to try to move beyond this. And it's not a surefire, but it sure helps to feel like you're doing something.
Well, and it sounds like it must have worked, because I think at the top of the show, didn't you say that she's doing, is it downhill skiing?
She is.
Yeah.
And that was another part of, you know, really just a lot of outdoors. And I'm not sure where the woman is who wrote that in, but, you know, we're up in the Northeast, so we have the opportunity for those colds. Fall and winter days where it's, you know, the kids want to be inside and bundled up, and I'm, nope, come on, out you go, get outside and get into that fresh air. But it felt really important that that is a part of their lives and that they're moving toward that. So, but I urge her to continue to put that out there and to give voice to that and to say out loud, this was such an amazing moment for me when I was working with this energy healer, and I said to her, I, you know, this fear, it won't leave me alone. I push it down deep inside me. I try to run from it. And she said to me, what if you just looked fear in the eye and said, yes, I'm afraid. I'm really afraid. And it was like by speaking it aloud, almost like I brought that fear out of the dark, and by shining the light on it, it could no longer continue to breed and grow and cause all that anxiety within me. It was amazing. It was sort of that the truth will set you free, and in many ways it did, and that's still a technique I often call upon when I'm finding I'm anxious about something, you know, involving the children, especially, you know, if Andy gets sick and I'm thinking, oh gosh, and I feel old residue start to flare up, I say, I'm afraid. This really scares me. This brings all this up. I'm always afraid of losing her. I'm afraid of losing my son. And there, I gave it voice, and suddenly I can breathe again. So that was another piece of advice that came through someone else that I'd offer up for others.
Well, and I think it's very wise advice as well. Now, we're talking with Casey Matthews, and the book is called Preemies, Lessons in Love, Life, and Motherhood. Now, we're going to take a break, but again, as I said earlier, if you're listening to the show on your computer, if you go to www.caseymatthews.com, you can look at some of the pictures and really be a part of what it is that we are talking about. So we will be right back in about 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're back with Answers for the Family. We are talking with Casey Matthews. And what we're talking about are those unexpected moments in life after which nothing is ever the same. In this case, it's the birth of a premature baby. We're talking about responding to crisis and trauma and the universal lessons that we can all take away from these events. And fortunately, Casey has shared these with us in her book, Preemie, Lessons in Love, Life, and Motherhood. Now, Casey, we've got another, this is an email that has come in that I would like to share with you. And this one says, I am an LPN in a large hospital in Los Angeles, and 25 years ago, just out of nursing school, I spent my first 2 years in the maternity ward. I came back to be a head nurse in the same department. Those small, beautiful babies are nothing short of miracles. They have strength and spirit and a will to live that inspires me and should inspire all of us. There are so many mothers who need to get past their fear and guilt and see into the courage their babies have to share with them. I feel this is a great job, and much praise to you for your writing such a wonderful book for these mothers. Be assured that I will be passing your book out at every opportunity, and this one is signed Gloria S.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Oh, I love that. See into the courage of the babies, because they're the ones who are so strong. And if we, you know, if fear hadn't come in the way and that need to protect ourselves, we would really see that right from the get-go. And it took me all those years and perspective looking back to really get that, to really understand that. That's amazing. And I wanted to speak to that and the prior instant message you had gotten, because it brings it up, that fear piece, that oftentimes when we have a premature baby, we think of things in terms of, oh, this is because the baby was premature. And I think especially for parents whose firstborn is premature and have not experienced a full-term birth, it's hard to know, is this a typical parenting thing or is this a premature baby thing? And I had the luxury of having a full-term birth and knowing what a typical birth like that was, and then being able to compare it with the premature birth. And I felt so much fear when my son was born healthy and weighing 8 pounds. And it was that same fear of losing him. I remember every morning waking up and thinking, please, God, please let him still be breathing and healthy in his crib, and feeling almost like something was wrong with me and I was losing my mind, because why would I feel this way? And it wasn't until I started to say that aloud to other mothers and they'd say, oh, gosh, I do the same thing. That's so normal. So I think it's sometimes hard to distinguish, is this a typical parenting thing or a preemie parent thing? And sometimes the line is so blurred. But to know that it's normal and you're not alone, I think, is so important.
Now, that brings up a good question. I mean, because you had a normal pregnancy before that, so you sort of knew what you thought you would expect. Did that make this actually a scarier experience than maybe if you had not gone through it before, so you didn't really know what it should have been like?
You know, I don't know if there's a good answer for that in general terms, because I can only speak from my own story. So I would say, oh gosh, I feel so lucky that I knew what a traditional birth at 40 weeks was like, and that I had experienced that prior to having our daughter born so early. And then other moms would argue, oh no, I'm so glad my firstborn was the preemie so that I knew I could be so careful with my second. So it's hard to say one way or the other. For me, that is how I felt, but it's not necessarily the case with everybody. I just felt like to have gone through the premature birth experience and then find the courage to have a second pregnancy, knowing what the first was like, that was always what I felt like, wow, that would be just such so scary and so amazing.
Well, and another thing that you touched on earlier, which had to do with I don't know if I should use the word buying into, but, you know, buying into what some of the doctors will say, or but what some of the, quote, professionals will say, you know, such as, you know, prepare your child for the fact that they're going to be the smallest, or prepare your child for the fact that they're going to have these illnesses. I love the fact that you chose not to buy into those things. And I wonder if, you know, if we have a situation to where professionals and doctors, you know, feel that like they're, you know, like they're helping someone because they're going to prepare them for this, and yet in the long run, I mean, maybe they're doing them a disservice, you know, really by telling them that, because maybe you're planting these seeds. And I love the fact that you looked at it and went, you know what, I'm not going to buy into this. We're going to raise our child as if, you know, they are going to have this great, loving, healthy life, and you projected that on your child. And I'm wondering if that just didn't help, and if that's part of the reason why you have been so successful with this.
I can't help but wonder. And I think I don't even believe there's such thing as false hope. Hope is hope. So if you continue to believe anything is possible, which is really the theme of the book, anything is possible. We just don't know. And one doctor later, the neurologist, when Andy goes back to visit, she was a part of a lot of studies and research studies, he said, I'm baffled by her, how she's done so well. And he said, there's just so much we still don't know. And I think that really is the case, that we don't need to limit ourselves. And I don't know why it is doctors feel the need to spin things in such a negative way, and if they think they are doing a service to parents. I can't answer that. But I do hope that part of this message of the book will be that doctors who have found themselves in that place in the past will perhaps think twice about their approach and possibly change the way they are.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think to be able to point out what some of the possibilities are, I think is prudent. You know, in other words, here are the right possibilities of where you might be headed with this child, but to present it in as probabilities or even as just absolutes, I think might be not necessarily the best way to go, you know, in most situations.
Well, and that's why I wanted to present this picture of Andy, because at the time I didn't have any hope, and I'd had this vision of her as this 5-year-old child, and the photo of her is in the center of the book, that I later came to see this photo and say, that's her, that's the vision I held of this healthy child. And it was holding on to that vision of her the entire time. I just kept visualizing this healthy child, no matter how grim, how awful the situations were, she had 4 major surgeries, I always just kept visualizing her down the road, kept seeing her, and I didn't have that, and I wanted to offer that to other premature parents and say, you know, either look at her, look where she came, and know that your child can get there too, or create your own vision of this child, because they, you know, they really are miracles, like Gloria said, that, you know, they came here with this incredible strength and spirit and will to live, and they have incredible courage, and you know, they're teachers. These little babies have come to be teachers, that it's astounding the lessons they bring with them.
Now, and you mentioned 4 surgeries. I mean, what type of surgeries was she did she need?
Well, it was so interesting that I finally, after 4 days after she was born, stepped up, went to see her, felt that maternalness starting to open, and that was the day we had to leave the hospital. And this part of me that I didn't even really know existed, this deep, deep maternalness, really just kind of went crazy when I had to leave the hospital and leave my baby behind. It was the most unnatural event that I'd ever experienced. So we get back home, having left her, having had this big emotional scene in the NICU, and we're not home but 2 hours, and the phone rings saying that they had discovered a hole in Andy's intestine, and they had to whisk her across the sky bridge to Children's Hospital next door and do an emergency abdominal intestinal surgery. Mm-hmm. And she, as a result of that surgery, she obviously survived it, but at the time driving back in to the hospital, we had no idea what the outcome would be. We both just kept saying, we can't lose her, we can't lose her. And she came out of that with an ostomy bag that she would have for a year. And then 2 weeks later, so not 2 weeks later from that, 2 weeks as from the day she was born, she had a valve between her heart and lungs that wasn't closing on its own. So that had to be surgically closed. Another very traumatic surgery for all of us. And finally, we started to sort of find this rhythm and routine in the NICU, and she started to get healthier and to grow. And eventually, we were at 77 days, and the NICU staff was all talking about her getting ready to go home, and I'm in a panic about bringing home a baby with an ostomy bag, and how am I supposed to care for this baby? But I really gave myself this big pep talk and came to the place where I thought, no, this is where she's meant to be. I need to have this baby at home. And just when I'd sort of stepped up to that place, she had an eye condition, which is very common in preemies, called retinopathy, and it can progress to a point where it warrants surgery, and hers had. So she ended up having laser surgery for that and having to be intubated again, having the breathing tube put down her throat into her lungs and back in sort of the critical care NICU. So it was yet again just another setback. So it's sort of this one thing after the next, and they call it the NICU roller coaster because you just never know. It's up and down, and it's kind of this, it leaves you so undone and so full of anxiety because you kind of feel like you never know what's lurking around the next corner waiting to take your child from you. So, and then it was after she'd been home for 11 months. She had the ostomy reversal and had the hole in her intestine repaired and reconnected. And that was a whole other ball of wax for me, because having her rehospitalized and having her back in the hospital really threw me, and I ended up hospitalized myself leading up to the surgery because I was so deeply anxious about it and thinking it was a heart attack or a stroke at the time, and it turned out to just be a massive anxiety attack. And it was at that point where I really, everything kind of came out and I broke down, and it was from that point to start to sort of rebuild and say, I can't keep going on this way. And I needed, you know, greater resources to continue in discovering really that I had post-traumatic stress disorder at that point and what I needed to do to move through that.
Well, Casey, I got to thank you. And unfortunately, we are out of time. But again, for everybody out there, the book is called Preemie, Lessons in Love, Life, and Motherhood. And again, this is not just a book based on, you know, if you are pregnant or if you've had a preemie. This is a book about life lessons that we can all really take something from. So, Casey, thank you so much for
taking the time
to tell this story. Obviously, you have touched a lot of people, and we really appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you so much. And I want to thank Gloria, who wrote in, because it's these NICU nurses who are just gifts from God and angels that keep these babies going. So thank you.
All right. And again, for everybody out there, the website is www.caseymathews.com. That's CaseyMathews.com. Or you can go to our website, Answers4TheFamilyBlog.com. Thank you so much for listening, and please be with us next week as well. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.